David Helm has told me I should not be an impressionistic preacher. What am I going to do? And what you're going to do first is work on structure. That's the first tool we're going to go over in our week here, is the tool of structure. You've got, as Dave illustrates, you've got the text, you got today, and I don't want to be an impressionistic preacher, so I'm not going to just jump over there. I'm going to do the work of exegesis, right? How am I going to begin? Let's say, read, pray, jump into structure. Jump into structure. What do I mean by that? Here's the way we would articulate the principle. I'm just going to take the time to write it up here on the screen. Every text has a structure. The structure will reveal an emphasis. That emphasis must shape our message. You understand how that is? There's an author named Mortimer Adler, wrote the book, How to Read a Book, if you're familiar. And Adler communicates in this guide for analytical reading, every kind of message, every kind of text, every kind of book has a structure. And you don't really understand the message of that book until you can X-ray through and see its structure. See how the book is communicating what it's communicating. You have to see its skeleton. You have to be like a paleontologist, right? Unearthing the bones and seeing how this whole communication has been put together, how it functions, how it works. So we have a little doodle for this, right? We got our skeleton dude. But of course, most of the time, when a paleontologist unearths bones, they don't find a skeleton just all put together. What do they unearth? Just bones. And unfortunately, sometimes what we're guilty of in our preaching is not preaching how a text is put together, not preaching the emphasis of the text. We just grab a bone, right, and run off and say, look what I found. I don't really know what this is. And I don't really know what it's a part of, but it sure is interesting, right? And I found it. Let's talk about it, right? Let's talk about what I found. So much so that our you know, often our study reveals, you know, this sort of thing. You know what that is? Right? It's just the parts and pieces. It's just the pieces. And so often, what we can be guilty of in our study is we find parts and pieces, and we just bring those parts and pieces into our message without preaching actually the emphasis of the text itself. We're just bringing parts and pieces without seeing how it all works together, and thus communicating what the Spirit has placed in the inscripturated text, right? We're just bringing parts and pieces without understanding the whole. So, how do we find structure in our text and thereby communicate the text more faithfully? If we're going to do the hard work of exegesis, to communicate the faithful word, understanding what was communicated to them, then we're going to have to understand how this text works. How do we find the structure, particularly in an epistle? What are some strategies that we use to find the structure of a text? Taking answers. Some strategies. Okay, we're gonna find. Yeah, so we got verbs / grammar, right? There was another answer over here. Repetitions. I also cannot spell. Other strategies. Right. So those repetitions might be repeated words. They might be repeated themes. They might be repeated ideas. Right?
Discourse.
Yeah, actually, you bring up a really good point. And the term that he used was discourse. We really need to understand what text type we're in, right? We're taking that for granted here in 2 Timothy. We know that this is an epistle. We're working in discourse, right? Discourse is our text type. There are two other text types in biblical literature. They are narrative and poetry. So if we're going to find the structure of a text, it would be very different if we're working in poetry than if we're working in discourse. And it'd be very different if we're working in narrative than if we're working in discourse. If we were working in poetry, we'd be talking about stanzas. If we were working in narrative, we would be talking about the plot arc, right? We got the setting, we got the conflict, rising conflict, climax, resolution. That gives the structure of our narrative. But the text type we're in right now is discourse. Other strategies. Yeah, exactly. Connecting words. You could say logical flow. Another strategy I think that goes without saying is read it, right? Read it, reread it, read it, and reread it, right? Get the idea that's present in the text into your head. Okay, these are some of our main strategies for unearthing the structure of our text in discourse. We're trying to unearth the structure of our text, but not just parts and pieces, not just the bones, but actually placing those bones together so that we see what kind of animal we're dealing with, right? Right? I think it's worth saying that doing structure work, which I think should be our first instinct when we're trying to handle the word, is do some structure work. I think it goes without that it should be said that we just got to figure out what we have on our hands, right? We got to get the basic structure. We're not trying to get every bit of the finest detail of how exactly all these pieces go together. We're just trying to figure out what's the structure of the text so I can understand how it works. I just want to know how this thing works. We recently bought a Gold's Gym as a church. We bought a Gold's Gym. We renovated it. So we started with the demo, and we tore that thing on the inside. We tore it down to shell. So we just got the outside. And once we'd done the demo, we could have tours and stuff in there, which is great for fundraising, right? Hey, everybody, put on hard hats. I'm going to take you a dozen at a time. I'm going to show you this place. And we walk in there. They're all wearing their hard hats. And we're just down to shell. There's nothing in there. And I'm saying, all right, here's where the worship center is going to be. Here's where the kids' rooms are going to be. Here's where the bathrooms are going to be. And the looks I got on people's faces were like this. Okay. They couldn't see how it worked. They couldn't see how the space worked. So a month or so later, we started putting up the studs. We started putting up the drywall. You could see the structure of the space come to life. Started doing some more tours. People put on their hard hats, walking around. Okay, here's the worship center. I didn't even have to tell them. Here's where this is. Here's where this is. They just go. They're like, oh, this is awesome. I can see how this works, right? And that's what you want when you're working in a text, trying to unearth the structure, trying to put the pieces together so that you can see how the text works. Let's look at an easy example. We'll just look at a really easy example to start with. Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. We're going to be looking at verses 5, sorry, through 17. In Colossians 3, verses 5 through 17, work with your partner, real quick, to just identify the basic structure of this text. Using some of the strategies that we already talked about, this is an easy one. Work with your partner to unearth the basic structure of this text. There's lots of bones, but what's the basic structure? Go ahead, take 3 minutes. Okay. Let me pause you right there. I am fairly confident that you guys got the basic structure of that text, and we'll talk about it in just a second. But before we do, I want you to also answer with your partner this question. So what? What emphasis does that structure reveal? Right? There's lots of bones, there's lots of bits and pieces, some really impactful things that we could say about the bones inside this structure. But what is the emphasis that this structure reveals that's being communicated by Paul in Colossians, right? So talk about that with your partner as well, and then we'll talk about it as a large group. Go. All right. Okay. So this is kind of a gimme. This is kind of an easy one, right? Colossians chapter 3. What is the structure of this passage here, what's the structure? Go back there.
Classification.
Classification, what do you mean by that?
Well, it kind of has patterns in it where, like you were saying,
what do you think the overall pattern is?
The first part starts with the command, put off, and then he lists through things like that, and he repeats that phrase a number of times, and then it transitions to put what you are put on.
Put off, put on. Another way to say that?
Don't do.
Positive, negative, right? This is positive, right? This is negative, right? Old, new, it's contrast. So you've got this, and this. It's two big pieces contrasting each other. So what? What is the emphasis that that structure reveals? What is Paul communicating?
Transformation.
Elaborate on that.
Transformation, renewal, resurrection, you know, that in Christ we're new creatures.
Right. So if in Christ you're a new creature, right? If that's true, if you have new life, and this is new life, you had old life, then if you have new life, then here's what new living looks like. If you have new life, then here's what new living. This is what old living looked like. Here's what new living looks like, right? That's the emphasis. Now, the thing is, thing is, there's some really punchy like preaching points in here, right? You could grab one of these bones and just go to town preaching moralism, right? Right? And we want to preach a moral way of life, but that the substance of our preaching is new life in Christ, right? So it would be really easy to just grab one of these bones, run off and say, look what I found, let's talk about it, right? If you, without honoring the structure of the text and therefore the emphasis of the text, you have new life. So let's talk about what it looks like to do new living. All right, let's do another one, a little bit more complicated. Turn to 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy, we're going to be spending the bulk of our time on this exercise. 1 Timothy 1, 3 through 7. 1 Timothy 1, 3 through 7. Let's talk a little bit more about our strategies, right? We've got our strategies of repetition. Right? Grammar. Logical connectors. Work with your partner. Oh, I'm sorry. 1 Timothy 1, 3 through 7. Work with your partner and identify also imperatives. Identify some of the imperatives, some of the repetitions, some logical connectors that are present in this text. Repetitions, imperatives, logical connectors, what are you seeing? Work with your partner for just a second and then we'll talk about it. Okay. All right, so what are some things that stick out? What are some things that stick out? So we're unearthing the bones. What are the things that stick out to you in this text? What seems to be going on?
The word charge is repeated.
All right. Charge. How'd you get that? Repetition,
well,
right?
Repetition.
Right.
It's a main verb that Paul is telling Timothy early on.
Okay.
False teachers. Here's what we are to charge them.
So it's a main imperative, but it's also repeated. Okay, great. So that seems to be like a main bone here in the skeleton. We're not even trying to put it together yet. We're just trying to get what do we have to work with here? What else do we have to work with? What else seems to be sticking out? Yeah.
I saw it when I was reading it a couple times.
Okay. So what I'm hearing from you is there's false stuff. Like a grouping. Right? And there's true stuff. Another grouping. I think that's going to be really helpful. What other bones?
It's a sandwich.
What do you mean by that?
They're all your grouping, a bunch of grouping of negative things in the beginning. Verse 5 is the meat. And then he continues to go back to some of the negative things that to be on guard for.
Okay, so we're seeing positive stuff, we're seeing negative stuff, positive, negative, right? We've got this instinct, we've got this feeling like we've got some sort of sandwich here. We've got a contrast, somebody said the word contrast. And then, is this a sandwich, right? Is that what we have here? We're doing structure work, that's great. And I promise you, by the time we're done with this, it won't be perfect. Right? We're constantly revising our understanding. Okay, we move the bones around here. Like, okay, is this working? Is this how this works? What else sticks out? Let's keep going.
A couple imperatives. Remain at Ephesus so that you may charge certain persons. And then it connects it to, I think, a logical connector in verse 4. It says, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies, which promote speculation rather than stewardship from God that is by faith. So it's a logical connector.
Okay. All right. Slow down right there at that last part. Say that again.
So, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies.
Charge them, right? Charge them. Don't do this.
Right.
Don't do this. Don't do this.
Which promote speculation rather than the stewardship from God that is by faith.
Okay. So there's this charge we already highlighted, and there's the result of the thing of these false things. The result is speculations. Right?
It seems Paul's emphasis isn't necessarily on telling Timothy to charge, but on to remain so that he can charge.
Remain so that you can charge.
Right.
All right.
There's like one, there's only one command in this text. Is to remain so that you can charge.
Okay, so remain is definitely like at the top, right? Remain. In other words, Timothy, you have a job to do. Mm-hmm. You have a job to do. Like I said before, remain in Ephesus, but then he gets into what the job is, yeah. Right? So you could kind of say that there's a following imperative, right? Following this, remain there so that. So remain so that. This looks really sloppy, doesn't it? That's something I really want to point out. It's like, at this point, we have no structure. That's okay. We got bones. We're unearthing structure. We're putting it together. We've noticed there's a main imperative. Remain, you've got a job to do. So that, and then we unpack that job. There's a result of these false things. Any other results?
6 and 7.
What do we see?
It goes with what he says at the top, what he was just reading in verse 4, devoting themselves to myths and endless genealogies,
mm-hmm.
Which both of these have certain persons.
Mm-hmm. We saw another repetition.
Yeah.
There's certain persons.
And then in verse 6, they have swerved from sincere faith, having wandered away into vain discussion. And then again in verse 5, talking about sincere faith, verse 7, where they are desiring to be teachers of the law without understanding either what they're saying or the things about which they make confident assertions.
Okay. So we see the certain persons repeated, right? Maybe a chiasm.
Verse 5 becomes the central element, and you got repetition of ideas before and after.
Okay, we got repetition of ideas. Something that feels chiastic, some sort of contrasting structure, right? We notice that there's a result or an output from the false things. Paul gives us these false things, and he says, "Here's the result: speculation." There's also a result of the true things, right? Although it doesn't go true things, then result. It starts with result or aim, and then the true things, right? What aim?
Love.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, so we got love. Okay. Charge is repeated. What if we did this? So we've got a bunch of bones out there. What if it is a contrasting structure, like our brother was pointing out? Let's just fiddle with these bones a little bit. There's a charge to certain persons, right? There's another charge. Who's got that charge? Right, this is ours. We got our charge. All right. There was bags of true stuff and bags of false stuff, right? What was in those? So, false stuff. Yeah. Charge them not to teach any different doctrine. And then this was in the bag. myths, genealogies. And all of that, there was a result. We noticed that bone too, right? That there was a result, there was an aim, or there was an output from that stuff, which was, remind me, that all results in speculation. Okay, but our charge starts with the result this time, right? The aim, the output is love. And what was in the bag of true things? Right. Pure heart. Good conscience. Help me as we go. Sincere faith. Okay.
We had stewardship of God, which is by faith, because that's not what they're doing up there.
That's true. So you've got this charge certain persons not to teach different doctrine, nor devote themselves to myths and in endless genealogies, the results of which are speculations. Rather than, right? Rather than this stewardship from God by faith, right? Right? You got, charge them not to do this. This is what the results will be. They are not. What about us? Our charge aims at love, pure heart, good conscience, sincere faith. Is there another contrast? So this is swerves from that, right? You see another piece of it?
Furthering the administration.
Sorry?
Furthering the administration. That's the other positive that you want to list it there, right? In verse 4, furthering the administration of God, which is by faith.
Furthering. Oh, the stewardship. The stewardship. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Administration. Right. Yeah. Sorry, a little translation thing there. Yeah. So, what about this? These people, these certain persons, have swerved, right? There's kind of a contrast here, right? Right, they've wandered into vain discussions, and they desire to teach without understanding, right? Is this starting to seem like how these bones fit together, right? That there's this, as our brother said, this contrasting structure. You've got certain persons should be charged. We have a charge. There's a result of what they're doing, and there's a result of what we're doing. And then, of course, this is actually tied here, right? Our stewardship is from God by faith. They've wandered into vain discussions and desire to teach without understanding, right? So you've got this contrast. Is this exactly how this text fits together? Well, I don't know yet. I've only been doing this for 15 minutes, right? But this is already better than grabbing the bone, good conscience, and saying, good conscience, look what I found. Let's talk about it, right? Right? So then let's get to this. So what? Work with your partner for a few minutes and talk about what is the emphasis of this text. Like if we've started putting the structure together here, and I'm sure there are improvements that we can make, but we've got a pretty good understanding of it, we've got this contrast going on, then what is the emphasis of this text? Work with your partner, talk it out. In fact, I'm going to challenge you to actually write down an emphasis. Write down an emphasis in the form of a sentence. All right. So let's go back. Let's go back to our principle. Way up here past these bones. Right? Every text has a structure. I think we've got a pretty good start on a structure that feels like this is how this text is working. This is what Paul is communicating to Timothy. I think we've pretty much got a structure. But part of the principle is the structure will reveal an emphasis, and that's what we just spent a little time doing. So what sort of sentences did you come up with? They're all going to be a little bit different, but also similar. What sort of sentences did you come up with as an emphasis for this text?
Kind of just boil it down to two words, which is don't move. So don't move from where you are, and don't move from your commitment. Just don't move.
Don't move. Mm-hmm. You've got a job to do, yeah. Right? Remain in Ephesus. Remain at Ephesus. Which is something that we need to pick back up, because like this isn't just like, hey, here's some things to think about. You've got a job to do, right? Okay, mm-hmm. Don't move. Okay, other.
We just thought like the most loving thing we can do is to point our people back to sound doctrine.
Sound doctrine.
Yeah.
Sound doctrine. Okay. Point our people back to sound doctrine. How else would you characterize the emphasis of this text with all of this contrast? Yep. Definitely we need to correct our opponents with gentleness, but there is definitely an element of correction and opponents and unsound doctrine, right? You got one? Yeah. So there's your stewardship, and then there's the spoilation, right? That contrast. So, yeah, you got one.
We said that there's a contrast between the pastor's desire for God's stewardship versus the preacher's desire for personal glory.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So God's stewardship and personal glory. Again, this contrast emphasis. Okay. Well, the principle has three pieces to it, right? The principle. Every text has a structure, right? Right. We're not just grabbing bones out of the ground and saying, hey, look what I found, let's talk about it. Right. We're trying to see how the argument of the author is being put together. The structure reveals an emphasis, but what's the third element of our principle? The emphasis has to shape our message. So if we've got this text that runs from verse 3 to verse 7, but we're starting to understand that the shape of the text is this contrast, then how should that shape our sermon? Like, in other words, you've already got a head start on a sermon outline, right? You not only have a principle, you not only have an emphasis, kind of a proposition, but you've already got a head start on a sermon outline, right? So take a few more minutes with your partner. You got your emphasis. Maybe you were going to tweak it a little bit. What's your sermon outline look like? You got two pieces, right? You got two contrasts. Nice and simple. How would you handle this as an outline? Go. All right, what kind of sermon outline do you have for us? Bro.
We did not come up with a complete one.
That's fine. Incomplete is great.
Well, we didn't even come up with much of that, but I mean, we were essentially getting at good stewards of the gospel and bad stewards of the gospel.
Okay. That's a great head start, right? Because the shape of that message is being controlled by the shape of the text that we've been handling, right? Okay, who else? Outline?
We were kind of talking about if you have kind of an emphasis faithful to the text through faithful leadership,
okay.
You would kind of talk about the charge to remain where God has you in the ministry he has, and then ward against stewardship against the gospel, proclaim stewardship of the gospel. And kind of those warnings against what they were, you know, all of the things that the false teachers were teaching on.
Right.
Would be warning against that type of stewardship and then proclaiming proper stewardship.
Right. Here's the job. None of this. Keep this out. Make sure this is in. Right. Simple. Right. A lot of work to do. Right. But it's Monday. Right. This is our first crack at this. This is our first tool. This is our first tool. We're just getting the bones out. This thing that isn't alive yet, right? It's our first tool. It's our first crack at things. But we're already finding that we've got some clarity and simplicity. Yeah, you had it. There was another one. Yes, bro.
Just building off of your emphasis on the contrast, just how to kill a church, how to build a church, and then the outline underneath that title, you know, he's telling us how to kill a church. He's telling us how to build a church.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great. What we start to see. Oh, yeah, we got one more. Come on.
What about just like a controlling analogy as an outline? So like talk about a highway, a straight lane, and then what it looks like to swerve off of that, and then the destination of both.
Okay. Swerving and driving swervy and driving straight. You know, some sort of contrast like that. Maybe a good start. Again, it's Monday. It's Monday morning. We're convinced that we need to apply sound principles as we do our word work to work towards an understanding of this text. That what is being communicated by the author to the recipient controls what we want to say to our congregation, right? We've abandoned impressionistic preaching, we hope. And we're not just preaching pieces and parts. We're trying to communicate what the text communicates. It's Monday morning, and we've already got a head start because we've been applying the structure tool to our work. We've got other tools that we're going to be tackling as we go, and we're going to be refining this emphasis, and we're going to be refining our structure. But here's what you can see. You already have a fruitful start, right? Within 20, 30, 45 minutes work, you're already going to have a fruitful start towards a proposition or what you might call the nail or your big idea, the main thing, right? You already have a fruitful start on your sermon outline, right? And not only that, but you already know how you're going to be able to connect your sermon outline for your congregation. Your congregation is going to be able to see how you connect your sermon outline to the actual structure of the text, right? They're going to be able to look at the Bible and go, oh, I see where he got that, right? That's a positive thing, right? They're talking about the guy that's walking out of church giving you the compliment, man, that was mind-blowing, right? That's not a compliment. A compliment is, I see exactly how you got that. I could see that. That's a compliment, right? So you already have a fruitful start on a proposition. You already have a fruitful start on a big idea. You already have a fruitful start on a sermon outline. And I think you would also sense this, that you already have a fruitful start on nuances. Like you've been walking in the terrain of the text. You already know kind of what's there. You've been handling it in such a way that you're going to be able to continue on in your communication of this text with some nuances. You've got a feel for it. You've already got a fruitful start on those three things, then this has been a pretty good hour spent in your study while you're trying to avoid impressionistic preaching. How much time should you be spending on structure? Well, it's hard to say until you feel like you can move on, until you feel like, okay, I've got enough of the bones laid out that I know what kind of animal I've got here. For some guys, that's an hour and a half. For some guys, that's 4 hours. A lot of that's going to depend on repetition and practice, right? Get your reps in. But it will be one of the most fruitful tools that you'll use. In fact, let me repeat this principle here, lest we lose it. Every text has a structure, right? We gotta find it. The structure reveals an emphasis. So after we've get the structure out on the table, we're pretty sure, okay, this is how this works. We need to ask ourselves, so what difference does that make? So this is two big blocks or four big blocks. What difference does that make in the emphasis of this text? And that emphasis must shape our message. Right, we want to carry that forward, both the emphasis and, in most cases, the structure of the text, shaping the structure of our message as well, right? What's some questions that come up as we do this? Yeah.
In working on the worksheets.
Yes.
And then it was a question number 7. I had the impression that you had to go through 6 questions in order to come to the preaching outline.
It's a helpful order.
This is not in the question number 2.
This is actually question number 1.
Yes. I'm saying that after question number 1, why question number 7, preaching outline, is not placed in question number 2.
Aha, okay, all right. So if structure is gonna shape our outline, why don't we come up with our outline right away?
Like what you suggested.
Right. And frankly, that's always in the back of our mind, right? Like, okay, how am I gonna arrange this material? But it would be wise not to commit to that arrangement until we understand it a little bit better. After we've worked through the tool of structure, then we're going to look at context, literary context, historical context, those sorts of things. We're going to try to articulate the author's, not just emphasis, but his argument, right? So we've got an emphasis, like an archery target, right? If this is like our big target, the emphasis, I think this is the kind of thing that Paul is talking about. Then we're going to work from emphasis all the way down to argument. Here's what Paul is saying. Right? And that's going to take some more work, right? It's a great question.
It seems to me that it takes a tremendous amount of understanding of the text just to come up with what verses fit together as a good structure. So how do you, because, you know, in my experience, you preach through a book,
mm-hmm.
and you give out to the congregation, here's the plan, and
right.
This is the text I'm preaching for the rest of the next 6 months or whatever. How do you come up with that?
It's a great question. Segment, right? How do you segment this book so that you have good preaching pieces? And I'm going to let Dave answer that later on in the week, right? But it always comes up. Always comes up, right?
Just want to ask you, Joe, I mean, we don't talk that way. We don't write that way.
Do we not? Right. I understood your question because it was structured, right? You gave me an example. You asked the question at the beginning, and then you finished it by repeating that question, right? The whole thing was framed up. I understood your question perfectly because it's structured. Discourse that's chaotic doesn't really communicate anything. And what we know is that God's word is communicating to his people. Now, it doesn't always look the same because you have different text types. If you try to apply the tool of structure that with the strategies of discourse to a poem, it's going to be very frustrating And in fact, I know a lot of people who are frustrated by preaching poetry because they're only used to preaching New Testament epistles, right? And they find poetry frustrating because they haven't really worked the structure tools in poetry. But communication is structured. It always is, because it communicates.